This is a PDH Online audio course in modern closed-circuit television design. This tape is the first of 8 sessions discussing details in great detail and in general principles of modern closed-circuit television design. In this session, we will talk about introductory concepts, things like learning objectives, who the intended audience it's directed towards, what benefits we're hoping that you'll receive from it, and a little bit about the history of closed-circuit television and broadcast television, which led up to it and is probably leading it away from today. In session 2, we'll speak of the closed-circuit television system, the camera. I broke the closed-circuit television system camera into 2 parts because it was so long. So we'll talk about the internals of the camera in session 2. In session 3, we'll talk about the enclosure, pan, tilt, zoom, and sound, which are related but enough different to deserve their own attention. Session 4 will be dedicated to video controls, things like a sequential switcher, quad multiplexer, video loop through, graphic system representation, simple systems, and complex systems. Session 5 will be dedicated to monitors or screens. We'll talk about things like screen size, resolution, brightness, contrast ratio and viewing angle, the enclosure and mounting of the monitor, and last, video projectors. In session 6, the topic will be analog and digital storage, a discussion of analog VCRs, the VHS tape of days gone by, time lapse, slow speed, and of course the digital equivalent, which is just about totally replaced the VHS unit, but at a similar price, more features, and very much an analog video recorder. Next, we'll speak of analog on digital, where we start moving into the digital revolution. The storage is on hard disk. We're making no pretense of incorporating the VHS tape and starting to pick up the digital features that have become available with advanced software, advanced processors, advanced graphics. Then we'll speak of digital conversion and digital features in some detail, and again on the hard disk. Finally, digital compression is going to get a fair amount of discussion. I hope it's not painful. There is a summary at the end of what you put in and what you get out, which is, I think, the only reason people talk about compression. The focus of that summary table is how much video can you put on a single DVD disc? And along the way, we talk about how much video you can put on a hard disk. Our unit of measure in hard disk is a terabyte. For those of you with some experience in computers, that's a scary number. That was more than anyone ever. We used to talk about the total knowledge of the Earth in a few terabytes. And now we can put a terabyte on a laptop computer and record 16 cameras for a month with very high resolution, very little compression. Session 7 is IP-TV. This is a term used in the literature, and I think it's an appropriate term for us to use. It's a new term to cover something that's been around for about 15 years. The reason for the new term is because the old terms have been taken over by other products. And in order to distinguish what we're talking about, we need a name for what we're talking about. We will call it IPTV. The old name might be webcam or PC cam or Netcam, and we'll talk about how those are really different products. We'll talk about a camera with an integral server, that is, it goes on to the local area network with nothing else except a little bit of power to run the box and a data connection on the back of it. Multiple camera server, which becomes an economic advantage in large installations. Bandwidth requirements. This is truly worth your attention because there is almost no hard information available in the market on how IPTV uses up an existing local area network. Actually, there are two readily available workarounds for this. First, put in your own network. Then you don't care if you're slowing down the word processing or graphic design of somebody else doing something else. If it's your own wire, your own data switch, your own power supply, your own uninterruptible power supply, it's nobody else's problem but your own, as long as it works. When it doesn't work, then we start getting into problems. But it is a legitimate question. How many cameras can you put on your own local area network? How many cameras can you put on the company's local area network before you start bogging it down? And very rapidly, we start talking about things like protection. I'm going to step back to that. On the answer on bandwidth is 30. You can run 30 easily with no interference and no problem. I have documentation that you can run an unlimited number, and it's in the course if you get the is it signed or did I strip off the guy's name? I think I stripped off his name so he wouldn't get angry phone calls. But he said, and he is a knowledgeable technician in the IPTV area, that it's unlimited, that you will have other problems with your network before bandwidth loading from TV cameras is the problem. Again, we were talking about 30, and I said, can you do 64? And he says, oh yeah, 64, 128, 256. There's no limit. I'm suspicious of statements like that, but I've personally tested 30 with success, and I've tested with 31 in problems, and that is part of the session 7 on IPTV. We will talk about viewing IPTV and the IPTV system, all the pieces and parts you have to put together to make it work. Session 8 is kind of interesting, and if you're like I am, that you sometimes jump around and don't exactly follow the outline, I'd strongly recommend that you jump out to Session 8, entitled Obvious and Subtle Design Errors. Because once again, why are you spending your time listening to this? And that is our dedicated topic in the introductory session, Benefit to Users. The benefit to users is to avoid making mistakes. Avoid spending money and not receiving the benefit that you're seeking. Well, the obvious and subtle design errors will give you gems. You'll get a number of items that you look for when the guy brings you in a proposal for a closed-circuit TV. And you say, aha, I'm glad to see you picked up on that. That's not going to be a problem. I hope you are not in a position to say, but what did you do about blank? And he gets that real sick look on his face. I'll get back to you on that. And at the end of Session 8, we'll talk about what's not included in the audio version of this course. Now, obviously, none of the graphics are included. It just doesn't work to drive down the interstate at 70 miles an hour and study a graphic closely to pick up the details. Other things that are not included for the same reason are the links to external sources on the internet. There's a page, maybe a page and a half, of good places to go to look at vendor products and some excellent white papers discussing the technology that we're talking about. And I will review these orally for you so that you know what's available. And when you get back to a computer, if you're still interested, you can use the URLs from the written version or just do a search against the keywords or the vendor names. Or better yet, the vendor name plus the keyword, and you go exactly to the page in the catalog where they answer your question. There is a quiz as part of this course. It is not part of the audio version of the course, and I think that's for obvious reasons. It just doesn't work. It is part of the internet connection. Now, what are we going to do in this course? Well, I've talked to you about each of the topics that will be discussed, and obviously the course itself is the details associated with these topics. But again, why are we doing this? In the written version, there's a section entitled Learning Objectives. At the conclusion of this course, the student will be able to specify compatible components for a closed-circuit television system. If you are an elder in your church and there's a problem that the Sunday services have more parishioners than places to sit, and you want to use the youth hall in the basement, this will show you how to go into a catalog or go into a store and buy the pieces and parts. With some confidence, it will work, and you'll get some good images, and you'll have a good system immediately upon setting it up. Again, with details on setting it up. Now, this is not just for parishioners who have expanded needs in their church. This is for people who are worrying about security in the wake of terrorist attacks and want to spend money. And again, a lot of times the people at the top want to spend money. They want to show the world that they are addressing the problem aggressively. How do you spend money sensibly to improve the security of your operation? And this doesn't matter if you're corporate headquarters, if you're a manufacturing facility, if you're a warehouse, if you're a retail store, if you run a parking lot, if you are a utility running water sites or wastewater sites. I mean, everyone who gets this concern and decides they're going to respond to it, once again, this is usually at the executive level, needs someone to help spend the money intelligently. And many times people who are not in the direct technical track are in the position to review work done by others. And again, it's important to recognize what works well, what works badly. Spend your money so you get the things that work well. We're hoping you'll be able to sketch the architecture of the system. When you have your first discussion with the vendor who's going to sell you the system or put together the system for you, he's going to ask you what you want. It's important to have some ideas of the inherent limitations in a system. That doesn't mean you have to design the system and then pay him to design the system. You have to be able to speak the objectives in a form he will understand so he can deliver a system that meets your needs. Also, there's a tremendous tendency for people who design systems to want to put in the newest, most wonderful toys because this is a chance to get to play with them. Well, if the newest, most wonderful toys provide benefit to you, that's a good match. If the newest, most wonderful toys don't meet your needs, that's not a good place to be spending your money. Understand the differences between TV, IPTV, VCR, DVR, and NVR. And we've already talked a little bit about those. Be able to select appropriate technology for each application. There is a very hard decision to make early in a project. Do you want an analog system or do you want a digital system? At what point do you want to convert from analog to digital? Do you want an analog camera with an analog signal and analog recording? Do you want an analog camera converted to digital? It goes back with digital recording. At present, I'm not aware of any cameras that directly put out digital signals. The ones that look like that actually have an internal converter. It's an analog camera with what's called an integral server that converts it to digital. But it's a decision you have to make. There's a lot of inertia, and there's a lot of very valuable experience saying analog works. We've got an analog system, we've got technicians that can do analog, and we're getting good pictures out of it now. Why do you even want to examine an alternative? And this will be discussed in the course. I mean, I think there are good answers to this, and I respect both sides of the argument. You should be able to specify television lenses in terms of mount, focal length, aperture, and aperture control. These are very technical terms, I agree, and they're not much fun, except they're essential to producing a system that works. Every element of the system must be right for the entire system to work. The first element in the system is the lens. If it's the wrong lens, you have no signal to send down the line, you have no signal to record, you have no signal to put up on the screen. So the lens is the first critical element, and I'm sorry it's technical. I'm sorry they're non-intuitive in many of the things we have to address in here, but it must be addressed to get a good working system. You should be able to specify a television camera in terms of CCD sensor characteristics, lens mount, video signal form, power supply, and enclosure. Once again, hardcore engineering. There's a range of technology out there. Unfortunately, the best technology is not conventional technology. And again, this will be something for you to decide if you agree or disagree. But in the course, we make the statement, and I'll make it now so you can start arguing if that's your viewpoint. It's a mistake to take your power for your TV camera from a local power circuit. The reason is local power circuit goes dead. You don't know why the local power circuit went dead. If you are taking it from a power line that parallels the signal line all the way back to the recorder, the camera keeps running as long as the recorder's running. If there's somebody there watching the screen, and somebody there has a UPS, uninterruptible power source, under his lights in the control room, under his video recorder, it is no cost whatsoever to provide that same power for the camera. So the lights go out in the gym, you can still see what's going on in the gym. And that's not a joke. With the lights out, you can see all video cameras today are more sensitive than the human eye with not much incremental cost. I mean, like $20 incremental cost. You can have IR sensitive and you'll be able to see in the absolute darkness. The human eye reports nothing and you get a decent image. Now, we're not talking entertainment quality, but we're talking a decent image. You know if somebody's hitting somebody or if they're all standing there or if they're running towards the exits. And again, what's going on here is we're taking the power from the video end rather than from the camera end. And there's a special cable, which isn't especially expensive, called Siamese cable, that does this. It runs the power along with the video and gives you the central power capability. Costs you nothing in labor, costs you very little in materials, and solves a very real problem, which may become a more real problem if terrorist kind of things occur, or if just you have bad people out there doing bad things. They don't have to be associated with any particular group to be bad guys. You should be able to specify a television monitor in terms of screen size, resolution, bandwidth, video connection, power supply, and enclosure. You should understand the strengths and weaknesses of viewing schemes, including pan, tilt, zoom, motion sensing, sequential switchers, quad multiplexers. Each of these are wonderful toys that you can buy to add on to your system. Each of them contributes some benefits in effect. We'll talk in terms of cost. I'm sorry, the conventional world doesn't include cost when we're talking about features. This discussion does include cost when we're talking about features. In the printed version of the course, there are actual catalog inclusions. Each catalog inclusion has the July 2005 price. That may not be meaningful at the time you're viewing this, or listening to this, or reading the text, but it's a base point. Add your own escalation factor. You'll know if somebody is trying to pay for his Bahama vacation off your project, or if he's giving you a reasonable price on the things you're asking for. You will pay for service in addition to the materials cost. Let's not be silly about this. And there's nothing wrong with paying for service, but you should recognize what component of the price is the service cost, what component is the labor cost, and what component is the materials cost. Very often, the materials cost is the lowest component in the system, and that's a scary thought. You should be able to review a closed-circuit television design for obvious and subtle errors. You should be able to identify key suppliers for each of the major technologies. This course is intended for professional engineers, architects, and contractors. It will also be of value to persons with technical background who wish to extend their knowledge into new realms. Advanced electrical engineering principles are referenced but not detailed, as the comment, terminating both ends of the video transmission line avoids reflection. This refers to the specialty of transmission line theory, which deserves many hours of independent study for true understanding. The brief reference, however, is intended to emphasize the importance of terminations and give a guide for further study should you choose. And it gives you an do-it-now action item. You terminate both ends of the video line, then you don't get reflections. And again, in the course, what termination means will be discussed. Commercial television may be the most pervasive cultural force in today's American society. Since commercial television was invented, the technology has been applied to address private needs, from corporate communications to store security, to distance learning, to home entertainment, and space shuttle public relations. High-end security closed-circuit television systems are today very similar to the new digital news broadcast studios you see on the news reports at night at home. Color cameras on motorized bases can pan, tilt, zoom by remote control with stored settings for rapid return. The security cameras can include motion detectors, alarms, automatic focusing on sound sources, and other alarm system contact closures. Now, that's the high end. At the low end, modern commercial TV studios, again for an example, do not have large windows into the stage area. Instead, they have fixed wide-angle cameras to show the control room crew what is happening on the set. Similarly, fixed wide-angle cameras provide most of the pictures for store security. Remote control and automated pan-tilt-zoom cameras are used for corporate communications, distance learning, and home entertainment. For 50 years, commercial television used a set of standards developed by RCA, then an independent firm, based upon a 6 megahertz radio channel. Now, I apologize for getting into this hardcore engineering stuff for people who are only interested in getting a good image on the screen, but as you will see, the 6 megahertz limit in 1950 determines how good an image you get today on your security screen. The 6 megahertz radio channel with 525 vertical lines and 300 horizontal lines. Now, again, this is one of those confusing things, and I apologize for the confusion, but it's in the field, and if you're going to be part of the field, you have to accommodate the confusion. We rate the resolution on analog TV cameras in horizontal lines. And what that means is how many lines can be distinguished in a horizontal direction. From the left side of the screen to the right-hand side of the screen, how many lines can you see distinctly? If you can see 300 lines, 300 vertical lines, called horizontal lines, if you can see 300 lines, then it succeeds at 300 line resolution. If you look at a different picture that fills the screen but has 350 lines, and they start to blur together, then you're not making 350 lines resolution. 300 lines is the number we start with. 525 vertical lines is a hardware restriction on home televisions. Again, part of the original RCA standard that we all use on our conventional television sets. The new HDTV uses 2 megahertz channels. Once again, we're back to broadcast and the FCC limitations. The way they got more information into HDTV was they gave them 2 conventional TV channels. So you've got 1 conventional TV channel that broadcasts a conventional TV picture, and a second channel that gives you extra information for the HDTV. Now, what do you get out of an extra 6 megahertz? Now, let's think about this. If the first 6 megahertz gives you 300 lines, doesn't it sound like the second 6 megahertz will give you another 300 lines? So at the end of the day, you spend all this money and you go from 300 lines resolution to 600 lines resolution. Now, I haven't dug into the HDTV specification, and they probably do better than that, but they won't do a lot better than that because there are limits involved. I mean, you just can't do better than what is possible. I wouldn't be surprised to see something like 800 or 1,000 lines resolution. But again, this comes nowhere near the resolution you get on a photographic negative, 8x10 print, or a home computer. Home computer, conventional today on home computers is 800 by 600. Almost everything is 800 by 600. The bare minimum on home computers is 640 by 480. 1600 by 1200 is very, very common. I mean, this is if you go into a retail store and buy their cheapest computer, you get 1600 by 1200. And that's twice the expected resolution of HDTV. So you can see how digital is digressing from analog and digressing from the broadcast standard that started it all. A closed-circuit TV system is made up of cameras, connections to the control point, controls, displays, and usually storage. It's a difficult decision whether or not to buy a CCTV system. But after the decision has been made, more cameras, more displays, and more storage are relatively inexpensive. Each of these components will be discussed in terms of technical characteristics, use and performance, design specification and drawings, and budgetary pricing. Analog and digital components can be combined for CCTV systems. Today, digital camera sensors are converted to analog signals for transmission. The entire system can be analog. However, it's becoming more common and much less expensive to convert the camera signal to digital packets transmitted by the existing local area network and provide all downstream processing and storage using local area network and personal computer devices. After cameras are discussed, analog TV and IPTV will be addressed. A graphic representation of a closed-circuit television system is presented now in the written portion of the course, and I will attempt to relate that to you as a word picture. At one end, we have the camera. As mentioned previously, we are interested in the lens. We are interested in the CCD sensor, the physical electrical device that changes light into electricity. The camera itself, enclosure, mounting, aiming, bracket, things like that. We're interested in the video transmission, which is not described in the generalized system diagram, but there has to be a video transmission from the camera back to the control room. Also, there has to be power for the camera. There are people who will tell you that the camera can run off the video cable. What they're doing is they're sneaking the power down the video cable. And what happens there is it becomes a proprietary device. I am very hesitant to recommend proprietary devices. The reason being, you must buy replacement parts from that vendor. When that vendor decides he wants to sell a new technology, you don't buy any more replacement parts. You either buy his new technology or technology from somebody else, but your total investment is down the drain, unless there are enough of them around that people can make money by scavenging the old systems. So I'm hesitant to these innovative technologies that are limited to one manufacturer. I'm also worried from the maintenance viewpoint. Technicians don't expect to see power on a video signal. If they encounter power, meaning it sparks when you unplug it, you're going to have an unhappy technician there, and I don't like unhappy technicians. I don't like the idea of a fellow on a ladder working in a dark space above a drop ceiling, and something sparks. I just don't like that. But it's available. In any event, we must recognize the need for a video signal and power, even if they're combined in the same coaxial cable, or if they're combined in power conductors under a common jacket along with the video cable. Controls, yes, we're going to spend a lot of time talking about controls. The single example that is most readily understood is a sequential switcher, where you have 8 cameras around your school, one on each of the doors, and they come into a screen on the secretary's desk. And the sequential switcher goes camera 1, camera 2, camera 3, camera 4, camera 5, camera 6, camera 7, camera 8, camera 1, camera 2, camera 3. Then she says, there's something going on at the gym door. So she pushes one of her buttons, and it stops and looks at the picture on the gym door. Hey, I know who that is. And she writes herself a little note or starts a video recorder or some darn thing like that. But that's what we mean when we talk about controls. And controls can get much, much more complicated. The screen, we've talked about the screen. Again, it has a video signal. It has a power connection. The video signal is identical to the camera video cable. Why is that? Well, in the old days, there was a camera and a screen. One cable went all the way from the camera to the screen. When the controls were introduced, they had to take the signal from the camera. They had to provide a camera to the screen. Obviously, it was going to be the same signal coming in and going up. The very earliest devices were mechanical. There was actually a mechanical connection between camera 1 and the screen. Then when it went click or kerchunk or however it did it, there was a mechanical connection between camera 2 and the screen. But you can think 24/7 going click, 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 click. Those things beat themselves to death and nothing flat. So today it's all electronic. There's an electronic switch that switches to camera 1, camera 2, camera 3. And there's an electronic timing control which switches it from camera 1 to camera 2 to camera 3. And let me just throw this in now, your first nugget of wisdom. You're looking at a mechanical system if you see a flash every time it changes cameras. You're looking at an electronic system if there's a smooth transition. Another problem we had on the old systems was video roll. Each camera is actually a world unto itself. In theory, you can connect them together, but it doesn't work except in broadcast television. So the pictures from camera 1 are slightly different from the camera 2. And when the screen tries to synchronize with camera 1, then tries to synchronize with camera 2, has a problem, and it rolls until it makes synchronization. Again, that is unavoidable in mechanical switching. Easily avoidable in electronic switching, because you put a delay line in there so that the start of camera 1 is synchronized with the start of camera 2. So once again, when you see video roll, you're seeing some old, old technology. The screen is worth some interest to us, and the digital video recorder. And a very interesting question here, and I hope you picked up on this, and if not, it'll be brought up later. How can the same signal go in two different directions? Especially after that example in the introduction about terminating the cable at both ends. Wait a minute, there's three ends on this cable. The source end is the camera. The load end is the screen. What do you call the DVR? It's the extra end. Well, again, these problems have been addressed, and there are a range of really good answers for them that we'll get into. Sharing events with large audiences is an aside. The true focus of this course is security TV. Now, it doesn't have to be put in for homeland security. It can be put in for store security or production control. Just so when the maintenance office gets a call from Bay 7, they've got an idea what's going on in Bay 7, how much stuff is on the floor. But the security paradigm is really the origin of this course. If you have a need that is similar in some way to security, this is the course for you. How is sharing events with large audiences similar with security application? Well, we're going to spend just a few minutes talking about that, and then we're not going to address it again. The primary focus of the course is security applications. These can be life safety situations and deserve close attention and care. However, the skills in developing a functional, reliable closed-circuit television system can be valuably applied to a church with more parishioners or wedding guests than seating. It can be used in public meetings that exceed the capacity of the venue. Within limits, it can be used to share public performances with homebound parents. A quality public address system is already in place in churches, schools, and public auditoriums. The only requirement for sharing events to locations which have speakers is the installation of a camera, a cable, and one or more monitors. This course discusses camera selection, cable selection, and monitor selection. Sharing of public performances is technically feasible, with actually less work, that is less cost and fewer man hours, than installing remote monitors. IP technology, which will be discussed in the course, readily lends itself to access via the internet. Required is a netcam, possibly $300, an audio pickup option for $150. It must be assigned an internet address and connected to a local area network and to the internet. There are limits on sharing public performances with homebound parents. First, it is probably a violation of copyright law to distribute Broadway musicals. It is probably not a violation to distribute choir performances of public domain or local arrangements. In between requires judgment. Second, the netcam technology presented here is confidently rated by its manufacturer to support 10 viewers concurrently. It's been tested successfully with 30 concurrent viewers. It will almost certainly not work to distribute graduation to 4,000 remote grandparents. However, the manufacturer says this is feasible with use of a mirror server, but that is a substantial information technology undertaking not addressed in this course. Third, sound is as important as image. An existing quality public address system solves this problem without any attention or investment. Remote listening will be difficult. The sound option on Netcam is a box with a sound hole, which is located at the camera. It will not pick up good sound except for coughing by audience members near the camera. The sound option accepts external microphone input, but microphones, a mixer, and a skilled operator are a major undertaking. Remote sound has not been investigated here in detail, but firms who do web broadcasts almost universally use telephone conference sound services. This concludes session 1. Session 2 will get into the details of how a camera works internally.